Welcome to this special Tuesday Democratic Convention edition of Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. It's 2:06 in the afternoon. We're coming to you, as we always do, live from the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. Trevor Young, that soaring music you used in the billboard, the start of the show, what was that? It was three song. All right, you'll tell me during a break. Anyhow, it got us off to a start with great majesty and grace. This is a very busy day on Political Rewind. Of course, the Democratic Convention kicked off last night in Philadelphia. There were some extraordinary speeches, I think many people would say. There was dissension as the Sanders people tried on several occasions to stop the proceedings and express their dismay about, not just about Hillary Clinton, but about the email controversy that erupted, the leaked emails that show that the DNC really did want to tilt the playing field for Hillary Clinton. I think many of us who watched it unfold thought that was probably happening. The emails seem to show it really was. So let's launch right into our conversation. Thomas Wheatley joins us for the first time. He's the news editor at Creative Loafing and reports on politics, among other things. By the way, I want to start doing it. What's your Twitter handle?
At Thomas Wheatley. It's the longest Twitter handle I could. I didn't get the whole 140 characters.
W-H-E-A-T-L-E-Y.
L-E-Y.
Yeah. All right. Beth Shapiro, now retired, but a longtime Democratic consultant and pollster. Beth, glad to have you here. You're not big on Twitter, but you do have a handle.
I have a handle.
And it is?
I think it's A-T-L-B-E-T-H.
Yeah, it is.
I like following. I much prefer to follow than right. to add to the Twitter sphere.
We also have the chairman of the Fulton County Republican Party, Trey Kelly, here. Trey, do you have a Twitter handle?
Trey Kelly, yeah.
All right, at Trey Kelly. So welcome to all of you. We're going to start right away with a phone conversation, and we're going to include her in as much of the conversation as she can be with us for. With LaDawn Jones, who is a Bernie Sanders delegate from Atlanta. She's been on Political Rewind before. Dawn, I know it's LaDawn, it's a very busy day up there, but it's very good to have you join us by phone. How are things going up there?
Everything's great. Thank you for having me. I'm actually sitting outside next to the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia, and it has been a very interesting day and a half so far.
Well, let me start by asking you about the news that's been breaking over the last hour. NBC reported just about an hour ago, I have not seen it picked up elsewhere, although it may have been, there had been talk all day today that the Sanders and Clinton campaigns were in negotiations over how to handle tonight's roll call vote, at which Hillary Clinton will certainly be nominated by the Democratic Party. And those negotiations presumably involved whether Bernie Sanders would place Hillary Clinton's name in nomination and whether he would take a page out of what Hillary Clinton did in 2008 with Barack Obama, which was to stop the roll call vote. As you'll recall, she came on stage and asked that the convention nominate Obama by acclamation. We are now told by NBC News that is not going to happen. There will be a full roll call vote. What's your understanding?
Yeah, I've heard some of the same rumors. I do believe that he's going to come up and place her name in nomination. However, there's been a lot of negotiations back and forth because of the protests and the booing that's been going on. But something tells me that the kind of candidate that Bernie Sanders has always been, he believes in the process. So although he may agree to put her name in nomination and support her, I have a feeling he's going to want everyone to have an opportunity to have their voice be heard.
LaDawn, where do you stand right now? Yesterday, of course, the Sanders delegates really made their voices heard throughout, especially the early part of the proceedings with speakers at the podium. They were shouting for Bernie Sanders and felt unwilling to stop their shouting on her behalf, on his behalf. They refused to jump in bed with Hillary Clinton quickly. How are you feeling about that right now?
You know, I am really torn because I still support Bernie Sanders wholeheartedly, but then there's also some political realities. I serve in the General Assembly and know that sometimes you have to compromise. That's what politics is all about. But I can tell you that these Bernie Sanders supporters, and we often call them kids, but I mean, they're people of all ages. These folks know the issues. I mean, really deep down, know the issues, know the politics as it relates to what they want to see happen in our country. And how can you not support that? How can you not support people wanting to stand up? They didn't just start booing at the beginning of the program. Bernie Sanders had a private delegate-only forum before the actual convention. The gavel was hammered at the convention, and they even booed Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, I thought that was rather remarkable. Thomas, I don't know whether you got to see the video out of that meeting, but were you there, LaDawn?
I was there, and I mean, I was completely caught off guard. I was standing directly next to the stage, and of course, when he came on the stage, they cheered loudly. They gave him all the Bernie love, but the minute he got out that we need to support Hillary Clinton, the boos echoed across the room.
And he was clearly, he was really, I was watching as that unfolded. It seems pretty clear he was kind of stunned to have his supporters turn on him like that. I thought the look on his face said a lot.
LaDawn, what do you think is the end game for those delegates who are booing? What do they really want to see happen?
They truly believe in the revolution. So they want to see a true revolution. They want the progressive arm of the Democratic Party to be more inclusive. They want them to be far more progressive in fighting against the TPP, fighting for health care, fighting for, and not just settling for mediocrity, like let's walk this middle ground. That's what they want. They want them to go all the way to the end. Unfortunately, as Bill asked, you know, how do I feel about it? That's just not reality. And so I think just this morning already at the breakfasts, we're seeing them come to terms that, listen, I think Michelle's speech and a few others made them realize, wow, we can't have it completely our way. And already, just this morning, we're starting to see a change in the people.
Well, stay with us, LaDawn. As we talk with everybody here, I want to get you, Trey, and you, Beth, involved as quickly as possible, too. But there were a number of moments last night where the Sanders delegates, where there were efforts to bring everybody back in the fold. One of the most interesting, before we even get to Michelle Obama, was the comedic actress Sarah Silverman. Let's listen to what she had to say.
Hillary heard the passion of the people behind Bernie, and brought those passions into the party's platform. And that is the process of democracy at its very best. And it's very cool to see. She's like the only person ever to be overqualified for a job as the president. So I tell you this, I will vote for Hillary with gusto as I continue to be inspired and moved to action by the ideals set forth by Bernie, who will never stop fighting for us.
That was Sarah Silverman. Beth, an interesting moment followed that. We already played the sound at the very beginning of the show. She and Senator Al Franken of Minnesota standing up at the podium together were supposed to get off the stage, but Paul Simon, who was coming up next, was still tuning up his band, so they had to ad lib. And it was at that moment that Sarah Silverman made the comment that we played in the very beginning of the show, which is saying to the Sanders delegates, you're being ridiculous. And there are a lot of people who thought that was a turning point, a moment that mattered in terms of how this whole thing comes together.
I think it was counterproductive because I think that the Democrats did, I think, an excellent job of staging last night. I think having humor with Al Franken and Sarah, although I wish she would have just left her last comment off, having music, particularly stirring music to some of us at least, from Paul Simon, and then having three speakers, at least two of whom, not one of whom knocked it out of the park, the other hit a pretty solid home run.
You're talking about Michelle Obama.
I think the First Lady clearly hit it out of the park. I think Elizabeth Warren, it was unfortunate for her. She had to follow Michelle Obama because it was hard to match that. And I think Senator Sanders did an excellent job. I think his for what the party needed him to do, I think he hit it out of the park last night as well.
Trey, there was a lot of talk last week. You were a delegate to the Republican convention in Cleveland. And, of course, the media really had a lot to say about it, especially the first night of the convention, but really subsequent nights as well, talking about the chaos in the queue in Cleveland. Up until Michelle Obama, the same thing seemed to be unfolding in Cleveland because of the—I mean, in Philadelphia because of those Bernie Sanders delegates, yes?
Well, watching last night, it seems like we were just the appetizer for this week's main course as far as that goes. Obviously, a very similar scenario with the Ted Cruz folks, last week and Bernie Sanders this week. Naturally, I had a big smile on my face last week and this week, but for different reasons. I'm certainly enjoying watching the back and forth. But I do think that the Democrats are going to have more difficulty turning some of those Bernie Sanders votes relative to the Republicans turning the Ted Cruz votes.
LaDawn, what do you say to that?
I think so. I mean, so talking to a lot of the Bernie folks, they are the Bernie or bust folks. There's two types of Bernie supporters. There's those like myself who understand that in November we can't let Trump become the person to pick our next Supreme Court. However, for the Bernie or bust folks, you know, they really feel that it is a stand against the Democratic Party and to not take their vote for granted by not voting with the party. However, the good thing that I think is going to be the turnkey is that Trump is going to keep on talking, and he is going to talk himself into making those folks realize they don't have a choice but to vote against him, even if it's not necessarily a vote for Hillary.
What will be interesting to see is that both parties have factions who are not happy with their nominee, and only time will tell whether they balance each other out in terms of Republicans who just cannot vote for Trump and Sanders supporters, some of whom are Democrats, some of whom are independents who are attracted to him, whether they just cannot vote for Clinton. I think it's too early to know how that's all going to shake out. But it seems to be an unusual situation where we have both major parties with candidates that have their own partisans who can't support their nominee.
The difference that I see is I can totally see the longtime Democrats falling in line with Hillary Clinton. It's the young people, I think, that could certainly turn towards Trump because they want something different. They're tired of the same thing, and I can completely see
that. Wow, that'll
scenario.
Be interesting because I have not seen any polling that suggests that young people are ready to jump in with Trump, but who knows, Thomas?
I haven't seen it either, and I mean, anything I would say is just based on conversations that I've had with people, and I don't see... I would see more young people who feel frustrated by the process going for somebody like Jill Stein, maybe Libertarian.
The Green Party candidate.
Yeah, the Green Party candidate, more than Trump, just because, and again, I haven't seen any polling, but from everything that I've talked with people, and keep in mind I'm talking to in-town Atlantan liberals and progressives, that Trump is toxic.
Thomas, what is interesting, and the rest of you, and LaDawn, you're welcome to weigh in, what is most interesting to me, what we saw last night, as we saw last week, is two major parties that are trying to adjust to candidates who are not members of those parties.
Mm-hmm.
They are both outliers. They both essentially came in and made themselves into party candidates. But certainly Donald Trump has not been a Republican. And Bernie Sanders, as we all know, has been a socialist. He's caucused with the Democratic Party.
Right.
But until he decided to run for president, he wasn't a Democrat. So is it, LaDawn, surprising that rather than doing what Hillary Clinton did in 2008, asking that Hillary be nominated by acclamation, that he would continue to be sort of a holdout? This really isn't his party, is it?
It really isn't. And he's made it clear, and he has been not shy about that at all. And the other factor that we have to consider that makes it more interesting and makes these folks able to do this is social media. Social media gives people, and the internet gives people, the opportunity to do research, make opinions on their own, espouse their opinions to others. They're not relying on mainstream media. And I think that this is I don't think a just a unique year. I think this is what we're going to start seeing more and more. And on the Jill Stein thing today, there is already a rally before the convention, and there are thousands of the Bernie supporters rallying today with Jill Stein. I don't see many going over to Trump. I just think that he's so polarizing that either you're going to be a Trump supporter or you're a Republican that's going to vote because you're a party person. You're not going to see people jumping over from Bernie over to Trump at
all. Well, most of the polling on that has suggested that some up to 90% of Bernie supporters say they will probably vote for Hillary Clinton, assuming they do show up to vote at all. But could Bernie Sanders, in his desire to extend his campaign as long as he did, beyond the time when he knew he wouldn't win the nomination, tonight, if he doesn't, in fact, ask that she be nominated by acclamation, will we be on November 9th saying that, as we do our forensic
postmortem,
saying that one of the reasons that Hillary Clinton lost is that Bernie Sanders kept her vote total down and sent people to the Green Party or the Libertarian Party? What do we all think about that?
You know, based on his actions yesterday and his speech last night, I don't know that that will happen. First of all, we're at the end of July. We've got 3 full months of campaign. We've been paying attention up until now to the nominating process, to the conventions. Kids are about to go back to school come September. I think the general public is really going to start to tune in. And over the next few months, if Senator Sanders did what he did last night, not just in his speech, which I thought was a very effective and gracious speech, but also in terms of he was tweeting his supporters, asking them to not boo. He was trying to get get his supporters under control. If he continues down that path, I think that he can help bring along the majority, perhaps the vast majority of his supporters to back Clinton.
Beth, I'm glad you said that, because we haven't had a chance yet to listen to the Bernie Sanders, a couple of sound bites from that, and we will in a few minutes, because maybe I am giving him short shrift. He did, in fact, endorse her in a pretty wholehearted way. But as LaDawn, you point out, and LaDawn, I'm going to give you a last chance before we take a break, as you point out, his delegates and his supporters, they may be beyond his control.
They absolutely are. To some extent, there are some who are beyond his control. You know, they've put out messages that, you know, Bernie disappointed us. We love Bernie, but the Bernie disappointed us. However, I think that part of the reason, he's definitely going to give her full support. I think that's why there's such disappointment. He waited very, very, very long after the California primaries to come out and actually make a definitive statement. He had some phone calls with his Bernie supporters in which he did not give clear direction. And so a lot of these Bernie supporters still thought that there was a chance they were coming to this convention and with a chance to still fight for Bernie as a nominee. And so they have this great level of disappointment that they're just now having to reconcile because he waited so long. But the fact that he waited so long and was very quiet for so long shows that he sat back, really had to think this through, really had to play out the numbers. And now that he's made a definitive statement, he is wholeheartedly supporting her. And I think we're going to see over the next several months that he is going to turn up that support and be able to convince them on a more personal level why. And he made one of the most important statements, the Supreme Court. I mean, I think that's going to be the thing that's going to turn, outside of the issues, a lot of the delegates and his supporters towards Hillary.
All right. LaDawn Jones, I'm a little worried about you. You said you're outside. Is it 100 degrees plus in Philadelphia again today?
Surprisingly enough, it is a beautiful breeze out here today. So it was a perfect day to be outside.
Good.
Tomorrow we get rain.
Well, listen, you're really very gracious to take as much time as you did to talk to us today. It'll be wonderful to watch how things play out tonight. And you're very lucky to be right in the middle of the action. I hope it's a good night for you.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Let's take a quick break. It's just about 2:25 in the afternoon. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back.
This week, Democrats meet in Philadelphia to nominate Hillary Clinton for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there, too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night of the convention. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill as we take you inside the arena and to the floor of the Democratic National Convention. It's special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
You can listen live tonight starting at 8 on gpbnews.org. On the next Fresh Air, the resignation of Fox News CEO Roger Ailes after several allegations of sexual harassment. We'll talk about how Ailes changed TV news, the allegations against him, and what his resignation means for the immediate and long-term future of the channel. Our guest will be Gabriel Sherman, the author of a book about Ailes. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on your GPB station.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. With us in the studio, Chairman of the Fulton County Republican Party, Trey Kelly, a retired now Democratic pollster and consultant, Beth Shapiro, and from Creative Loafing, their news editor, Thomas Wheatley. Thank you all for being here. I mentioned Bernie Sanders. He did close the night last night. You know, Thomas, I thought as I was seeing how they were stacking the speakers, very smart to close the night with Bernie Sanders because we knew he'd rile up his supporters. We knew they'd go crazy for him. And you wouldn't have wanted him to come on at, say, 9:30 because the rest of the night would have been a mess, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it would have been terrible. But also, while watching Bernie Sanders, I kept on wondering, is he going to pull like a Ted Cruz? I honestly thought about that. And they had one shot of Bill Clinton where it kind of looked like he was tapping his foot. Just waiting to be, you know, hoodwinked by Sanders, but Sanders, he has that effect. I mean,
he came through though.
Yeah, he
right?
totally. Yeah,
let's
he totally
listen.
Did.
Let's listen to just a minute of what he said.
This election is about which candidate understands the real problems facing this country and has offered real solutions. Not just bombast, not just fear-mongering, not just name-calling and divisiveness. We need leadership which brings our people together and makes us stronger. By these measures, any objective observer will conclude that based on her ideas and her leadership, Hillary Clinton must become the next president of the United States.
Bernie Sanders addressing the convention last night. Trey Kelly, as a Republican watching from a distance, what did you think about Bernie Sanders' speech last night?
Well, I think he's doing a good job of trying to corral his folks. He brought in a lot of people like Trump has that have not been in part of the process. And again, I think that those people are going to be tougher to come over. In addition, another big difference between the Cruz with the Republicans and Bernie with the Democrats is the email scandal. And, you know, I mean, that's a big deal, and it's just kind of, you know, cemented into some of people's minds, I think, with Bernie Sanders that, you know, this whole thing is rigged, and it's, you know, why would we ever want to, you know, go that direction?
I think that's a point that we need to take up, I mean, Thomas and Beth. Mm-hmm. I mean, this email dump from WikiLeaks happening as it did, as the convention was about to get underway, revealing emails that showed how little some of the operatives in the Democratic National Committee wanted Bernie Sanders to be the nominee. No wonder the Sanders people were as angry, even angrier than they might otherwise have been. That has been a big blow.
Well, you made the key point before, though, that Senator Sanders is not a Democrat, that this is the first time he's aligned with the party. So it shouldn't surprise anybody that people who are running the party wouldn't be crazy about him as their nominee.
Thomas?
But it was, no, I mean, for Sanders supporters, it was like video footage of the Roswell UFO landing. It was like proof of the man on the grassy knoll. It was a conspiracy theory proven. I mean, everyone kind of thought that was happening, but this was actual evidence that the DNC favored Clinton. It shouldn't have been surprising. It's definitely disappointing.
What do we make of the concerns that are being expressed, certainly by the Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party, that these leaks, that the emails of DNC operatives were hacked by Russian intelligence agencies, and that perhaps the Russian government is meddling in the U.S. election because they feel they're going to have a better opportunity with Donald Trump as president than Hillary Clinton. It sounds like something out of a bad Netflix series, Trey, but there are timestamps on these emails that suggest that it was Russian intelligence that got a hold of them.
Well, I think it's Clinton's campaign manager reaching a little bit, trying to, trying to salvage something out of the scenario. You know, is it possible? Sure. But I think he's just trying to deflect mostly, you know, away from the emails and what was in them, more so, you know, who got them.
If I were the Clinton campaign, I would just banish the word email from any official communications that were issued on my behalf. Mm-hmm. And I think that if they're asked about this, their answer ought to be the FBI is investigating it, because that is true. The FBI is investigating it. Let's leave it to the professionals. We'll see what they find and then change the subject.
Yeah,
please.
You know, I think of the Clinton campaign as being really smart political thinkers for the most part. Yeah. Working with a candidate who everybody knows has some significant problems, they're very good at their work. But I do think, Thomas, that if there are concerns that Russian intelligence, that the Russian government is interfering with the American election, maybe it would have been better to see if you could find somebody not associated with the campaign who wanted to make that charge. Coming from the Clinton folks, it just sounds like sort of a silly, it does sound like a preposterous way to diffuse the damaging information in those emails.
It sounds a lot like, well, first, I for one welcome our new Russian overlords, and, you know, but it sounds a lot like what Sony said after their emails were hacked. I mean, it was fingers pointed at North Korea. It almost sounds too, like, geopolitical to be true. But at the same time, I mean, you have to look at the connections that Trump has with Russia. And there have been some people who have been doing some pretty good reporting on it. No smoking gun, but, you know, Slate's been doing a lot of writing about it. Politico has done a ton of writing about Trump's campaign manager and his past ties to Ukraine and to Russia. They should have had somebody else probably introduce that. They don't want that to be so closely connected to him. But this has been a cartoon election. Like, it feels like I'm watching, like, WrestleMania. All this stuff is unfolding. It makes sense.
All right. Let's go back to last night for a couple minutes. Because there were some amazing things that happened on that stage last night. Trey, you know, one of the criticisms and complaints about the Republican convention last week, which you believe ended very successfully for your candidate, you've said, but there was no narrative. There was no storyline. There were very little. It was not when the Democrats kicked off their show last night, regardless of the Bernie anger that was expressed in the hall, you suddenly, I said at least, having covered 12 conventions, oh yeah, this is how a political convention looks. It's not what we saw last week. Was a little more haphazard, a little more spontaneous. There wasn't a storyline, wasn't a through line last week. I thought Democrats last night, whether you like their story or not, began building a case very methodically. And of course, the star of the evening was the First Lady, Michelle Obama. And I think we should listen. I'm going to play somewhat longer excerpts from the speech because I think we should all talk a little bit about how we felt about what she accomplished last night, or whether, Trey, in your case, you felt that she made comments that, in fact, the Republicans are going to be able to take advantage of.
I will never forget that winter morning as I watched our girls, just 7 and 10 years old, pile into those black SUVs with all those big men with guns. And I saw their little faces pressed up against the window. At that moment, I realized that our time in the White House would form the foundation for who they would become. and how well we manage this experience could truly make or break them. How we urge them to ignore those who question their father's citizenship or faith. How we insist that the hateful language they hear from public figures on TV does not represent the true spirit of this country. Like a bully, you don't stoop to their level. No, our motto is, when they go low, we go high. That is the story of this country, the story that has brought me to this stage tonight, the story of generations of people who felt the lash of bondage, the shame of servitude, the sting of segregation, but who kept on striving and hoping and doing what needed to be done so that today I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn. So, don't let anyone ever tell you that this country isn't great, that somehow we need to make it great again, because this right now is the greatest country on earth.
Michelle Obama's speech last night. Let's hear what you all think about that performance last night. Trey?
Well, Michelle's good at what she does. She's good at selling the message. She's been doing it for 8+ years. I do find it ironic that, was it 8 years ago when she said that she was embarrassed about our country until her husband got elected, and now all of a sudden it's a great place. That's kind of comical to me, but you know the what you mentioned as far as the themes. Of course, you know last week the Republicans had a different theme each month. Excuse me, each week, or each day.
Night. Yeah,
it might have felt like a week being up there.
Make America safe again, make America first again, and so forth. But you know last night's theme as far as family and so forth. You know that's one of the main things that I have heard that people like about Trump is his family, and having all them up there last week speaking on his behalf, I think people were really impressed by that. So I certainly see where Michelle was going with everything last night, but you know I don't think she has anything on the Trumps as far as family goes.
Well, I think that the focus on family and children last night was as much about starting to get more out about Secretary Clinton's extraordinary record of public service over the years and what she has dedicated her life to.
Yeah, that's certainly going to be what we hear tonight particularly, but they did start it last night.
They started that last night. And I also think that Michelle Obama was speaking as much to suburban moms, who many of whom tend to vote Republican, as she was to anyone else, because I do think that the Democrats have been running some ads, I forget in which state, in which they show kind of Trump's greatest hits in terms of his behavior and things he says, and in the context of your children are watching. And so I think that that's going to be a theme that the Democrats keep coming back to over the fall is this really the person that you want your children, you want running leading our country, and that your children are seeing on TV night after night.
Thomas, mm-hmm. One of the things that we certainly know about this week in Philadelphia is that the Democrats have got to do what they can to take an extremely unpopular nominee mm-hmm. and try to somehow make her more likable, emphasize her vast experience mm-hmm. In many different areas, both nonprofit and in government. And that's a heavy lift, but Michelle Obama certainly gave them a good start last night, didn't she?
Yeah, she definitely did. I mean, and she started the whole convention off on really an optimistic. It was a feel good speech, and I know that that last night was only the first night, but watching the Republican convention, the overwhelming emotion that I walked away with was fear.
Yeah, but here's my question. But that's right. And that's my question, Trey. And the rest of you, please chime in. We are being presented, both in Cleveland and certainly now in Philadelphia, with a very stark choice. Are voters going to vote their fears, concerns about the security of this country? Are they going to go for a strong man who says he will make people safe and bring their jobs back? Or are they going to look at the more optimistic vision of America, which is what certainly Michelle Obama started to lay out last night? Do you agree that's basically what we're going to see in this race, is a choice between those two things with two very unpopular candidates?
I do. The only thing that I've seen thus far that I agree with Hillary Clinton on is that she feels that both campaigns are completely opposite, to your point. I think that, unfortunately, when you see, it seems like every couple of days, a different terrorist attack somewhere, in the world, Donald Trump is just not dreaming this up. I mean, he's just, talking about what's going on in current affairs, and we do have big problems, and, I think he's, he can be the law and order chief.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead.
I apologize. Let's listen to another moment from last night that I think, again, draws this stark, several distinctions between Cleveland and Philadelphia and between the two campaigns in general. We know that Donald Trump is the candidate of the wall. He wants to send everybody back and then says they can come back, if they pass certain tests to get back into the country. And he is playing again on our fears about immigration. Last night, the Democrats went in a completely different direction, and they brought up to the podium Clara Ortiz, who's the 11-year-old daughter of two undocumented immigrants. And let's listen to just a little bit of what she said.
Most days, I'm scared. I'm scared that at any moment, my mom and my dad will be forced to leave. And I wonder, what if I come home and find it empty? Hillary Clinton told me that she would do everything she could to help us. She wants me to have the worries of an 11-year-old, not the weight of the world on my shoulder.
So, stark contrast, Ray.
Well, again, they're doing a good job of selling the message. And, the people in America have real concerns about what's going on overseas, some of the things going on with immigration. And, again, I think Donald Trump's just trying to voice, the concerns of a lot of Americans. And, I know it's a long time issue with Democrats and Republicans. I do think that the safety feel is something that touches a lot of folks these days, however.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, Thomas, that, it, as Trey points out, the more terrorist attacks, other shootings that may or may not be terrorism-related, the more these things go on, the question is whether this doesn't play right into the Trump campaign's message, which is, we can keep you safe. If I'm waking up in the morning on the Hillary Clinton campaign and reading another story about a tragic attack, mm-hmm. I've got to wonder if that's putting him right in the White House.
Well, yeah, I agree. But then what I hope gets discussed over the next few months is how is doing what you say you're going to do actually going to make you safer? How is building a giant wall going to make you safer? How is closing off and retreating from the world going to make you safer? How is opening up to the rest of the world going to make us safer? In terms of Clinton. Personally, I mean, I'm also tired of hearing about terrorist attacks. My family lives in France, and, every attack, it's texting, is everybody okay? But Trump, as he's doing now, is simply taking this very simple view of, we are just going to shelter ourselves. And that does not work. That does not, it does not work, especially in today's world.
You know, if Donald Trump had spent any time preparing himself to actually be the leader of the free world, he could win this easily. But as it is,
because Clinton is such a weak candidate, is well, that basically what you're saying?
Because of the strength of his personality, and I will keep you safe. But the fact is that the man has no understanding of how the world operates, and I think that certainly to Democrats and some independents, that's a scary thought. And which brings me to the bigger point I wanted to make about the Democratic Convention. I think part of their need, and they I think they did a great job last night, they're off to a great start, is to get Democrats excited about Clinton. She's been battered over the past few months. And I think a lot of Democrats look at this race and they go, how can somebody so spectacularly qualified and experienced be in such trouble and be so unpopular? And so I think part of what the Democratic Convention needs to accomplish over these 4 days is a pep rally and kind of a motivational effort to get Democrats excited around the country again, because we do see it as a very stark choice.
Well, tonight we're going to hear from Bill Clinton. He will talk about his wife, which I think is fraught with all sorts of potential dangers, obviously. As much positive energy as he brings and as popular as he was as president of the United States, we all know that there is a part of that guy that is always subject to additional scrutiny. So we'll see how that plays out. We're going to hear from John Lewis at some point tonight. So we'll have Atlanta presence at the convention, as we did last night with Stacey Abrams. And I think Jason Carter tonight introduces a video that was sent in by his grandfather, Jimmy Carter, who was not in Philadelphia, as he wasn't at the last Democratic convention. Before we take a break, we've heard a lot of Democratic sound bites. I think, Trey, we ought to hear from what Donald Trump is doing out on the campaign trail while the Democrats are meeting in Philadelphia. Now, we're going to play a soundbite in which Trump responds to the hacks and how the Democrats are playing them as a Russian effort to help elect him as president. But I want to ask you to come, when we come out of it, to give me your thoughts on the difference between the kind of rhetoric we've so far heard in Philadelphia and are likely to keep hearing, and the way Trump likes to talk to voters.
Today you saw the RNC where they were hacked, and they don't know, is it China? Is it Russia? And I'm watching this clown who runs Hillary Clinton's campaign, and I heard my name mentioned. It was Donald Trump that stole Donald. He's got some deal where Russia stole it for my benefit, Russia. So wait a minute, let's figure this out. Russia stole it from my, and the reason is that Putin likes me. And I never met Putin in all fairness. But that Putin likes Trump. And therefore he went in and he stole it and he wants Trump to win. See, now if the Republicans said that, they'd say, it's a conspiracy theory. It's crazy. When the Democrats say it, they say, you know, maybe Trump stole everything from the DNC. Ay, 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 what a group we have. But, you know, when you think about it, wouldn't it be nice if we actually did get along with Russia? Wouldn't it be nice? Not so bad.
So, Thomas, it was that kind of rhetoric that got Donald Trump the nomination and made him a star of cable news, of CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, the guy who you cannot turn off when he's on TV.
Yeah, he's totally entertaining. But when you really listen to him, it's unsettling to hear how he is devoid of ideas.
Well, the other question, I hear what you're saying, but the other question becomes, when you have a Michelle Obama up there with such soaring vision and rhetoric, which do the American people want? Do they in a primary it's one thing, but Trey, in a general, can he continue to have that kind of spontaneous approach? Where he does not, I mean, he sounded pretty like he could be president at the RNC Thursday night. Does that worry you at all, or do you think that's exactly right?
I think people like his frankness, telling it as he sees it. You know, he says what's on, you know, probably a lot of people's minds. You know, the one thing that why I think the Russians are not trying to get Trump in there is frankly, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have been, you know, completely weak when it comes to foreign policy, as a lot of people would argue. And Trump is simply pointing out that, you know, we're done with that. And when I get in there, it's going to be a new deal, a new day. And I'm going to keep America safe.
Okay. Tell you what, we're going to take our final break of the show. When we come back, I'd really like to just touch briefly. It's primary runoff day in Georgia, and we've got several races that are pretty interesting to watch unfold. So let's take our last break and come back and close the show talking a little about local politics. This is Political Rewind at 2:51.
Now is the perfect time to clean out the garage and get rid of that car you no longer need. You'll face the coming months with a fresh start, and by donating your used car to GPB, you'll even get a tax deduction. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or donate securely online at gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
I'm gonna get in my car. Ooh, drive away. Ooh, drive so far.
This week, Democrats meet in Philadelphia to nominate Hillary Clinton for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night of the convention. I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill as we take you inside the arena and to the floor of the Democratic National Convention. It's special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
You can listen live tonight starting at 8 on gpbnews.org.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. With us today, Thomas Wheatley, the news editor of Creative Loafing, Beth Shapiro, and Trey Kelly at the table. Glad to have you all here. Let's look at some of the races we're going to be reporting on tomorrow on Political Rewind. We're back for our regular Wednesday show at 2 tomorrow. Down in the 3rd Congressional District, we've got a heck of a runoff underway down there. This is, of course, for the seat that's being vacated by Lynn Westmoreland, who many people think is getting out of the House because he wants to mount a bid for governor. We'll see about that. But in the meantime, you've got Drew Ferguson, a businessman down there, running against State Senator Mike Crane, probably, I think, arguably, maybe the most conservative member of the Georgia State Senate. Trey, do you think that might be a fair characterization?
Well, him and Josh McCoon are certainly neck and neck.
That's exactly right. See, and it's an interesting race because, on one hand, Drew Ferguson has gotten all the business endorsements, and he got Lynn Westmoreland's endorsement. Mike Crane had Ted Cruz in Noonan for him last Friday, coming off of Cruz's very stormy appearance at the Republican National Convention. Where, Trey, there are people who think that Ferguson may have an edge in this race, but who knows, right?
Well, who knows with the runoff, right? Depends on who shows up today. And, I think Mike Crane's got a strong base of support. I think with certainly with Lynn Westmoreland getting behind Drew Ferguson here recently, I think that's a big plus for him. And if I was guessing, I would think that's how things will turn out tonight. But, again, who knows with the runoff.
One of the big issues down there, Thomas, has been Crane's the guy who said very matter-of-factly, if police officers come into my house with a no-knock warrant, I'm going to shoot to kill them. And that has become the biggest issue in the race. Drew Ferguson has been hammering him. Law enforcement has lined up against Mike Crane around this. That's been a big deal down there.
Yeah, it's been huge. And, I mean, what Crane said, I understand, you know, the issue that he was talking about, but the way he phrased it was basically saying, make this a soundbite, make this a negative ad against me. What's so interesting as somebody who's watching this from the outside is that the deeper issue is kind of like this is a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. You know, you've got kind of the pro-business, and then you have this like independent kind of conservative firebrand. But on the issues, I don't know what any of them stand for.
Yeah.
It's all about public safety and this one comment that he made.
I think I want to pick up on it and go back to you on this, Trey. I think that Thomas made a really important point here. We know that the 3rd District is so
conservative in its thinking, that we're going to get a conservative member elected to go up to Washington. But he's right. This is the battle that went on with Josh McCoon and the Religious Liberty Bill and other measures that pits the business wing of the Republican Party against the grassroots social conservatives, right?
Well, I think you're right. And, I think either of them would do a great job. But at the end of the day, it's who can get their people out. And if Mike Crane's got a lot of, rabid support, which he very well may, with Cruz coming down and so forth, he may be able to get it over the finish line tonight.
Right.
But
I'm gonna interrupt you because we're almost out of time. We have an amazing race going on up in Cobb County. Where incumbent chairman Tim Lee is really fighting an uphill battle against Colonel Mike Boyce, who's a 30-year Marine Corps veteran, never held public office. And, of course, among other things, government transparency, particularly around the deal to bring the Atlanta Braves to Cobb County, has been the issue that Tim Lee cannot seem to get free of. Yes?
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And it's my good friend and former colleague, Max Blau, wrote two great kind of profiles on the race, each candidate, and it has been entirely about the Braves Stadium.
I think what's interesting up there is that Cobb County Republicans are a fairly conservative lot. And in the past, you've had battles when Bill Byrne ran against Tim Lee 4 years ago. It was much more of an ideological battle. Whereas what I've seen Mike Boyce quoted as saying, this is not about ideology or how the counties run. I think mm-hmm. I'm not going to go in and make drastic changes. I just don't like the way the Braves deal was done. And I think if you look at the polls up there, that apparently the majority of Cobb County residents like having the Braves come. They're just not happy with how it happened.
Right.
And I think that the danger for Mike Lee is that
Tim Lee,
I'm sorry, for I know the man. Sorry, Tim. The danger for Tim is that I think the intensity of is going to be on Mike Boyce's side in terms
of
turnout.
Yeah, I think we're about out of time, but I think from all the insiders, political insiders that I'm talking to, Trey, and you may have heard the same thing, it's a heavy lift for Tim to win this race. It does look like Mike Boyce might be headed to upsetting him in the runoff today. So we'll see how all that unfolds.
Well, it will be tight tonight. The one thing I think is interesting, if I may tie things in, is, I think Mike Boyce is kind of playing off Hillary Clinton and her crooked politics type of theme that the Republicans have voiced. On this.
All right. We are out of time. I can't let you expand on that. But thank you so much, Trey Kelly, Beth Shapiro, Thomas Wheatley, for being with us today. It's been a great chance to get to talk about this exciting convention in Philadelphia and the races right here. Jenny Ament, Trevor Young, Tyler Morris, and Hannah Rose Adams, our intern, are in the control room putting all this show together, this show all together, and helping us get on the air with you. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Hope you can join us then for another edition of Political Rewind.